This is Jay Sekulow. Breaking news. The D.C. Court of Appeals in General Flynn's case issues an order telling the judge to explain himself.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
I think it means that the Court of Appeals is giving Judge Sullivan a face-saving, graceful way to get out of this on his own without the appellate court having to slap him down.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
Because there's simply no legal justification for what he's doing. And I think hopefully what the court is telling him is, you know, look, count to 10. We have to get our political disputes out of the courthouse.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the broadcast. Well, big news. Right after we went off the air yesterday, I mean, literally a couple hours later, the D.C. Court of Appeals, that's the District of Columbia Federal Court of Appeals, issued an order in General Flynn's case. If you remember, the issue there is a writ of mandamus that was filed by General Flynn through his lawyer, Sidney Powell, who's done a fantastic job in this case. I can't say that enough. And she asked for a writ of mandamus to not allow this judge to basically appoint this amicus curiae, which is basically now a special prosecutor, to continue to go after Flynn after the Department of Justice said, we're done with the case. We agree that the motion that was filed to withdraw the plea, the guilty plea, should be done and the case should be over. So the D.C. Court of Appeals yesterday issued this order. I'm going to read it to you. It says, upon consideration of the emergency petition for a writ of mandamus, it is ordered on the court's own motion that within 10 days of the date of this order, the district judge file a response addressing the petitioner's request that this court order the district judge to grant the government's motion to dismiss filed on May 7th, 2020. The government was also invited to respond within their discretion. But the key part here is that they want within 10 days the district court judge to file a response addressing the writ of mandamus that was, in fact, put forward by Sidney Powell. Now, I'm going to go right to Andy Economo, senior counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, as well as a former U.S. attorney. I was formerly with the Department of the Treasury. We litigated cases. Andy, this move of the Court of Appeals, this motion on their own ruling here. What do you read? What's your read on this?
My read on it is I've never seen it before in 45 years of practicing law. It is, in my view, a slap in the face to the district judge, telling him, what are you doing? When the defendant asks the case to be dismissed and the government concurs in that and says the prosecution should terminate, who are you to appoint a referee to come in and assist you in making a decision on something that Federal Rule 28 of the Rules of Criminal Procedure says you have to do ministerially? And what are you doing balking at this and refusing to rule? I think it's an embarrassment to the judge. I think it's a humiliating blow. It was done very tactfully. I agree with the comment that was made at the opening. It was done in an attempt to save face. They did not name the district judge. They could have said Judge Emmett Sullivan, but they just said the district judge. I noticed that. And it was unanimous, Jay. It was a three-judge panel of the D.C. Circuit that unanimously agreed and issued this order to Judge Sullivan. I think it is really a phenomenal piece of work on the part of Sidney Powell, on the part of Bill Barr. I think it's a humiliation to the district judge, really.
Well, you know, the fascinating aspect of this, Andy, and you said it as I read the order right now, again, ordering the district judge to file a response addressing the writ of mandamus. I've been practicing law for 40 years, too. I cannot remember a time where a court of appeals ordered a judge to actually issue an order and then require the judge to respond, basically filing a brief with the court of appeals. Usually they make their decision. It's reviewed by the Court of Appeals. This is, folks, unprecedented. All right, we're going to take your phone calls. 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. Let me also tell you this. Your support of the American Center for Law and Justice allows us to be engaged in all these cases, but also allows us to bring you this broadcast every single day. ACLJ.org. Back with more in a moment.
We'll be right back.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Hey, welcome back to the podcast, everybody. It is extraordinary. I mean, just extraordinary what has happened. So, again, if you're just joining us, the D.C. Court of Appeals, a writ of mandamus was filed with the D.C. Court of Appeals. And, Andy, let's first define for everyone what exactly Sidney Powell was asking for, because she was very specific. She said what the judge was doing to General Flynn by appointing that amicus curiae, a retired judge, who already opined on what has happened, and say, basically, you're appointed to determine if there was a constitutional, a criminal violation. You're basically lying when he entered his plea, which was unprecedented. She filed a writ of mandamus. What does that mean?
A writ of mandamus is an extraordinary remedy, rarely used in court. And it's, as I've said, I'm famous for the use of my Latin on the air. So you're going to hear it again, folks. It comes from the Latin verb mandare, which means to order. Mandamus is the first person plural of that, which means we order you to do this, that, or the other, whatever it is. Writs of mandamus are generally issued to public officials to do their duty. For example, issue a driver's license to this person. He's entitled to it. Why are you holding it up? Or the Secretary of State of a state, put someone on the ballot. He qualifies. But to see an appellate court issue a writ of mandamus to a district judge telling him, explain yourself and why you have become the player in a ball game where you should be the umpire and not take sides, is something I have never, ever, ever seen. And they tried to do it in a very sort of light fashion. Like I said, they didn't name the judge by name. They could have. And you know what else they could have done, Jay, is simply said, we order you to enter an order dismissing the case. They could have said that. The D.C. Circuit could have said, I don't want to hear any more. Dismiss this case. But they said to him, you got 10 days to explain yourself. And that in and of itself, to me, is a humiliation to a judge who served for what, 25 years on the district court? Bad thing.
Yeah, so here's what the order says. It's ordered on the court's own motion, means they made this part of the motion, that within 10 days of the date of this order, that's the order that came out yesterday, the district judge, that's Judge Sullivan, will file a response addressing the petitioner's writ of mandamus. And they, of course, that writ of mandamus requests that this court order the district judge to grant the government's motion to dismiss. So We have an interesting question that came in on Facebook from Susan. Let me read it. It says, Susan says, this whole ordeal reminds me of how important judicial appointments and nominations are. Dan Bennett, our director of government affairs, we were just talking about that 5 minutes before we went on the air, you and I.
It's a great example of how important they are, Jay, and why we spend so much time at the ACLJ focusing on not only getting the right people nominated by the president, but also then getting the United States Senate to give them fair treatment and confirming the correct ones. Jay, I will tell you, just this week, there were four district court nominees that were confirmed by the United States Senate, not getting a lot of attention because of all the news that is happening, but the United States Senate continues to confirm President Trump's judges. And then yesterday, Jay, the Senate Judiciary Committee, in addition to considering those 53 subpoenas that we've been talking about, they considered the nomination of Justice Walker to be a judge on, guess what court? The D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. So look, all of these things impact one another. The president has to nominate the right judges. The United States Senate has to confirm them. The good news is, behind the scenes, in the face of all this, those confirmations are still happening.
No, this is really great news. If you're listening or watching on Facebook or Periscope, we encourage you to share it with your friends. If you're listening on radio, tell them. Tell them, tell your friends. Well, listen to this broadcast. We're really breaking this down for you. Sidney Powell, the lawyer for General Flynn, has issued a very direct statement on this and giving her opinion. Let me play it for you, number 27.
They issued a very succinct order saying you've got to file a response by June 1. I mean, usually they invite a response from the judge, but here they are ordering a response from Judge Sullivan. They cite Fokker Services and Rule 48A, which require him to accept the government's dismissal. I mean, it says with leave of court, but that's a purely ministerial section to provide that the defendant cannot be punished repeatedly by multiple prosecutions, which wouldn't apply here because the government wants to dismiss it with prejudice, as they should.
So, I mean, she could not be any clearer what she's asking. So you have to then ask yourself this question. What is motivating Judge Sullivan to continue this case when you have the district court judge entering his initial order appointing this amicus curiae? Then you have the situation where you had the Department of Justice say, you know what, we agree that the motion to withdraw the plea should be withdrawn because we think there was misconduct sufficient enough that there was not cause to make a prosecution here. So all of this is happening at the same time. So we're going to take your calls on all of this at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Then let me tell you something else that's going on, because this is a day full of information. Freedom of Information Act request response came in that really addresses the whole situation with the beginning of Crossfire Hurricane. And I will tell you this. I'm going to read, again, I'm reading it for you. Folks, we're doing this remote, so we don't have things on the screens for me and for our others. But I'm going to read it for you here. It says, this was in an article this morning, and this is right out of the authorization document for this investigation. This investigation is being opened to determine whether individuals associated with the Trump campaign are witting, W-I-T-T-I-N-G, of and or coordinating activities with the government of Russia. And this was in 2016. Witting and coordinating activities with the government of Russia. Andy, break that one down. That's the authorization memo on Crossfire Hurricane.
That's the document written by our good friend, the disgraced and corrupt Peter Strzok, I think you're referring to, Jay.
Yep.
First of all, he doesn't know how to use the English language. What do you mean witting of? You say have knowledge of. Witting, we're not writing Victorian novels here. You simply ask whether or not Trump administration officials had knowledge of or were participants in something that came from Russia to interfere with the campaign in the Trump election campaign as it was progressing. So that it was obviously an attempt to see if the president was, or the presidential nominee Trump was colluding, and we were going to find out, and we were going to just start an investigation on our own. And I think it was based on some barroom talk in London, wasn't it, Jay?
It was with George Papadopoulos, and of course Papadopoulos denied that the statements that he made, that they said he made, that he even made. This became the basis upon which the entire Crossfire Hurricane started. Now we've got John Durham, the U.S. Attorney for Connecticut, looking at this in great detail. But then there's also real look going on in this in the United States Senate as well. Give us an update.
Yeah, there is, Jay. A couple of things that jump out to people on the Hill about this document. Again, it's the electronic communication, the document that basically opens Crossfire Hurricane. The number one thing that they're seeing, Jay, is Peter Strzok's name is listed four times on the opening page of this. So while James Comey may have been calling the shots, Peter Strzok was definitely the workhorse here. So when that subpoena lands on Peter Strzok's desk, I think this will be one of the documents that they will be asking him about. But, Jay, I want to read from you page three of this document. After they talk about George Papadopoulos's conversations in bar rooms and the rest, this is how they refer to Donald Trump's campaign and whether or not they were involved. It says, It was also unclear how Mr. Trump's team reacted to the offer. We note that Trump's team's reaction could, in the end, have little bearing of what Russia decides to do with or without Mr. Trump's cooperation. So, Jay, in the authorizing document, they acknowledge that they do not have information suggesting that Donald Trump's campaign is cooperating with a foreign government to collude or anything otherwise. And yet, Jay, they continue to surveil members of the Trump campaign. They continue to open investigations on members of the incoming president, even though in the authorizing document, it says it is unclear how Mr. Trump's teams reacted. That's all they had to go on, Jay.
I mean, you all understand exactly what's going on here, right? I mean, we lived this for 3 years, and a lot of you that are watching three and a half have lived this with us, which we appreciate. That's why it's so great that we can come to you each and every day. But you understand what's going on here. This was a sham from the beginning. And it was a sham based on information that was not only not reliable, that they couldn't coordinate in themselves. And this was put forward after, remember, don't ever forget that the interview with Flynn was done after the field office that investigated General Flynn said there was no evidence of wrongdoing. Now Sidney Powell, and we'll talk about this in the next segment, is saying, you know what? The FBI should release the transcript of the conversation between Lieutenant General Flynn and Ambassador Kislyak from Russia. Because you know what's not mentioned in it? The word sanctions. There's a lot more to unpack. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. 800-684-3110. Here's what I want you to do. Support the work of the ACLJ. You can do that really easily. We're bringing you this broadcast every single day. Part of your support helps us do that. It's on radio, it's on TV, 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year. Go to ACLJ.org and donate. You know we were in court just this week on the unmasking issue. You know that we said yesterday filed a brand new case. And then, of course, we had the situation that was resolved successfully involving Pastor Naren. All this week. Support the ACLJ at ACLJ.org.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
You know, I miss my bandmates, where, you know, obviously with COVID-19, but that was with our friend Ricky Skaggs and the great tune, Can't You See? Maybe at the end of this, Will, we can play that tune for everybody, brighten up the day. We're trying to figure out how to do a song, basically in remote location. So we'll see if that works. All right, I'm going to take some calls because we've got people calling in. Let's go to Diane in New Hampshire. She's online, too. Hi, Diane.
Oh, hi, Jay. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question, if I understand the General Flynn situation, is that Judge Sullivan is wanting to investigate perjury on his part because he had pled guilty, and he had put in a request to remove that plea. So my question really is, how does that implicate the entire justice system for anybody who has pled guilty? Are they going to now be charged with perjury when they want to rescind that plea?
Listen, this is, Diane, a great question. And I'll give my quick response, but I want to go to Andy Conway, who served as a U.S. attorney for a long time. And pleas are withdrawn. There are circumstances, things change, new evidence. But here, Andy, it was multi-layered. You had both the plea being withdrawn because of really unbelievably poor lawyering by the previous counsel. Sidney Powell's done a great job, but these previous lawyers were not doing a great job. In my view. But also, you had Brady material that had not been given, and then it was given, and then the Justice Department said, we're not going to move this forward. Andy?
Well, this is exactly the case. In the instance in which you take a guilty plea, and just procedurally, I want to explain it real quickly, the government or the defendant, one or the other, has got to give a factual basis for the guilty plea. In other words, judges I've appeared before have often said to the defendant, tell me what you did that caused the government to bring these charges against you. Or alternatively, government, what will your evidence show if this case went to trial? You got to establish facts. And what Sullivan, the judge, is trying to say is that at the time that he entered his guilty plea, and by the way, it wasn't even before him, it was before Judge Contreras that the guilty plea was entered, let's remember that, that he lied about what he was saying he did. But the fact is that the government had failed to provide him with Brady material which would exculpate and exonerate him from any guilt or wrongdoing, therefore making that plea a nullity. So there could be no perjury. So I don't know what Judge Sullivan is looking around for, but one thing that is for sure, in his business, he's not the U.S. attorney. I'm sure he would love to be, and he'd make a great one, but that position is already filled.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because one of the things that's happened here is the Supreme Court of the United States, just a week before I argued for the president, which is now, I argued last Tuesday, here's what's so interesting about this. So just 10 days ago, about a week before that, Justice Ginsburg, for a unanimous Supreme Court, 9-0, said that the parties are the one who litigate the cases and issues. Judges don't intervene and appoint people to do things that are not within the scope of the Article 3 responsibilities of what judges are appointed to do under the Constitution. So let me tell you what this is. In the last 3 years, but really concluding in the last year, I had the privilege of representing, as most of you know, the president on a whole host of issues. One of them was an Article 2 inquiry. Why is it Article 2? Because the special counsel, Robert Mueller, worked for the Justice Department. The Justice Department is part of our executive branch, in other words, part of the presidential branch. So we handled that case successfully. Then we had an Article 1 inquiry. What was that? Impeachment. Congress holds the authority for impeachment. We did that. So we concluded the investigation of the Russia probe by Mueller, the Article 2 investigation, in about July of last year. It was really done in May, but he testified in July. Then 6 months later, 7 months later, we concluded the Article I investigation, which was the investigation for the impeachment, which resulted in an acquittal in the United States Senate. Andy and I, and a great team of lawyers, tried that case for 3 weeks on the floor of the United States Senate. And then 2 months later, I did an Article III proceeding representing the President of the United States before the Supreme Court of the United States. So representing the Article II branch of government in its individual capacity, involving Article III because the Supreme Court hears it. We have a unique perspective on all of this. Obviously, we've lived it. So you have to understand that we have been highly involved. Now, I want you to know that while the judicial aspect of this is going on, Dan, we need to reiterate what is going on and explain what's going on in the United States Senate. So when people say, I don't think anything's happening, we have sued the Congress on behalf of the president. We have sued a DA in New York on behalf of the president. We have defended the president in these other proceedings. And now the Senate Judiciary Committee is saying, we're looking at it too. Fan, explain what exactly is going on here. I think it's, as we close this segment up, it's important for people to understand what has happened and what is happening.
Well, it starts with your conversation, Jay, about why the different articles, why the different branches have the power that they do. The Article I branch, Congress, as much as you might not like the impeachment proceeding, they have that power for a specific reason. They are directly accountable to the voting. The prosecutorial powers belong to the Article II branch because it's headed by the chief executive, who is directly accountable to the voters. The reason that Judge Gleeson in the Article III branch does not have that power, it's not just arbitrary, Jay. It's because they are not directly accountable to the voters. They are nominated by the head of the Article II branch, the President of the United States. Jay, the power that the United States Senate Judiciary Committee has here under Article I is the power to provide oversight and to investigate, and they have subpoena power. The chairman of that committee, Lindsey Graham, has begun a process to exercise that authority. It began yesterday when in their executive business meeting, he brought forward 53 subpoenas for consideration and debate. All of the names that we've talked about on this broadcast, all the way up to James Comey, James Clapper, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, Sally Yates. There are 53 of them, Jay. He laid them before the committee. They debated it. And then what happened was they were held over. This is a rule in the committee which says you cannot vote on them the same day they are considered. So, Jay, they were held over. They will be on the agenda for the next executive business meeting. That will be on June 4th. And every indication from yesterday is that the committee is going to authorize those 53 subpoenas on June 4th. So all these questions we're talking about, the direct players involved are going to get a subpoena from the United States Senate asking for them to respond and also, Jay, to turn over the documents we've been talking about.
Andy, we only have a minute here before the end of the broadcast, but give me your kind of 30-second summary of what we're seeing with this order from the D.C. Circuit today, yesterday.
Well, I mean, it's an extraordinary order based on an extraordinary writ. And it's telling, and to just say what Than was saying, it's telling an Article III judge under our Constitution, you stay within your limits. You didn't get elected by the people. You were appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate. And your job is to rule on motions before you and not to be a prosecutor making prosecutorial recommendations or decisions. Stay within your realm and keep out of the business of politics, which you have no business getting involved in.
Andy is 100% correct. We're going to come back from the break and take more of your calls. Remember, if you don't get the full hour, over at ACLJ.org, Facebook, or Periscope, or SiriusXM and other stations as well. Back with more. Support the work of the ACLJ also. ACLJ.org.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Talking about freedom. We will
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the broadcast. We're taking your calls, of course, at 800-684-3110. If you're just joining us, big news out of the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. That's the Federal Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia. Remember that General Flynn's lawyer, Sidney Powell, filed a very important writ of mandamus to the D.C. Court of Appeals. The issue there was this: the judge, Emmett Sullivan, appointed an individual, former judge, to basically bring charges against General Flynn, even though the government and General Flynn realized and recognized, agreed that the plea that he filed, the guilty plea, should be removed. The government was not going to prosecute. And Andy, it's very important to point out that was done because the government did an independent investigation and determined that the prosecution was not merited. It was not right, and Brady material was not released. Andy?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right, Jay. The government looked at the case against General Flynn under Attorney General Barr. He appointed the U.S. attorney from Missouri to look into it independently and give his opinion. And it was determined by the government, we did not treat this man according to the law. We did not give him material that would exonerate him and that would exculpate him from liability for criminal acts. We, for instance, had sent in, Comey did, agents to try to entrap him, to get him fired, to get him to make admissions, to get him to make lies so that we can get him out of office or prosecute him. Those kinds of things, which Robert Mueller knew about, by the way, in his investigation. And it was Robert Mueller's team who brought the prosecution of Flynn, never turned over to Flynn. All that taken together, Attorney General Barr said, tainted the prosecution, and the government moved to dismiss it. Now, Judge Sullivan decided, well, I'm not sure I agree with that. I think I'm going to look into this myself a little bit and make my own decision. I'm going to be the prosecutor as well as the judge, because I've made up my mind that this man, General Flynn, is a traitor. I called him that in court, and I'm going to appoint a judge to help me figure this out. Who are you doing this? And the D.C. Circuit told it and slapped him down very clearly and said, you explain yourself in 10 days, Judge Sullivan. They did it in a nice way, but let me tell you, it was pretty firm.
I'll tell you this. Let me read you what happened. So the writ of mandamus was filed, and then what happened was an order was issued. Let's put that order up on the screen, because this is really important to understand. So this is the order, if you're watching on television. United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, In re Michael T. Flynn, petitioner before Judges Henderson. The judges are self-evident. Two Republicans, one Democrat. Order, upon consideration of the emergency petition for writ of mandamus, it is ordered on the court's own motion. In other words, no one told the judge to do this, the court to do this. On the court's own motion, that within 10 days of the date of this order, the day they issued the order yesterday, the district judge, Judge Emmett Sullivan, will file a response addressing the petitioner's request that this court order the district judge to grant the government's motion to dismiss the case against General Flynn. Now, I have never heard of a district court being told by the Court of Appeals, you better defend yourself, not just with the opinion you've given, but the order you issued. Write a brief defending yourself. Now, I'm wondering, is he going to have his amicus curiae friend do it? Or is he going to do it himself? But the judge now has to respond. It tells you a lot in that kind of situation. Than, how's it playing very quickly? I know we're going near a break here. How's that playing in Washington right now? It just happened yesterday.
Well, I think it's a sign that the court sees this as an extraordinary circumstance that warrants this. But, Jay, if he has his amicus friend do it, his amicus friend wrote in 2013 that the government has near absolute power to extinguish a case that it has brought. So look, I don't even think Judge Gleason can make a reasonable argument that what Judge Sullivan has done is correct.
What year was that?
2013.
I guess his defense will be, well, now it's 2020, but that wouldn't be a very good defense. All right, we're taking your calls, 800-684-3110, 1-800-684-3110. We got a lot more to talk about, a lot more analysis that we want to give you. Again, call us if you have questions, 800-684-3110. You can also put your calls or questions in by Facebook or Periscope. Back with more.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
I think I'm having band withdrawal today because I'm letting the music play. For those on radio, you know this. I'm letting the music play a little bit longer than I normally would, but I'm having band withdrawal. Great question came in on Facebook. Ansel on Facebook, could the district judge appeal to the Supreme Court? Well, here's an interesting thing. You wouldn't have standing to, in my view, but you've got, you know, I'm assuming the Court of Appeals, if they were to rule in favor of Judge Flynn, what the district court judge has to do then, Andy, is issue the order if the court says, hey, you don't have the authority to do this. Withdraw the, you know, they want the motion granted. Grant the motion. He has no choice to appeal anything that way. He's not a real party in interest in that sense.
No, he has no right to appeal. It's like saying that a court of appeals has reversed me in an opinion. I'm going to hold them in contempt because they don't agree with the law as I see it. Doesn't work that way. You do what the superior tribunal says that you to do, and whether you like it or not, that's the way the justice system works.
Let me go to Ray, who's calling, and he's got a great question. Go ahead, Ray, on line three. You're on the air.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you for everything that you've done for the president. Just a quick question. Can Jed Sullivan be impeached or removed? Is there a precedent for that?
No, he can be reversed. That's what would be the remedy here. He would be reversed. If the writ of mandamus is granted, he would be reversed. Was it an impeachable offense? Probably not. That's the only way he could be removed. It's a life appointment. That's not going to happen. Now, no one's saying that. What they're saying is the judge is wrong, constitutionally wrong, wrong under his authority, and should be removed. And how you remove that is you remove the opinion, the order, not the judge. But this, again, does point to Than the importance of judicial nominations in this whole issue that we're talking about. You got to keep your eyes on the judicial nominations, which, by the way, your American Center for Law and Justice is doing just that.
Yeah, I mean, the legislative branch has an important role here. It doesn't have to rise to the level of impeachment for them to have a role. It starts before Judge Sullivan ever got his seat on the bench. They were the ones responsible for confirming him. And that's why, Jay, their view of this is fairly important. And frankly, it goes back to the conversation that we had about the separation of articles. It is in the Article 1 branch's interest, Jay, to make sure that the Article III branch does not get out of balance of the authority that they have been given. Because if they do, Jay, it's the voters that lose on this. So coming back to your question about judicial nominations, we said this earlier, but three district judges were confirmed again this week by the United States Senate. A fourth had cloture invoked, which, as you know, Jay, is pretty much as good as confirmation these days because the threshold is the same.
Right.
And yesterday, the Senate Judiciary Committee considered the nomination of Justin Walker to be a judge on this very court, the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. So even while everything else is happening, the United States Senate is confirming President Trump's judges. When those are confirmed, Jay, it'll be 194 judges confirmed since President Trump took office. That's pretty amazing.
It is pretty amazing. All right, we're taking your calls, 800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Also taking your comments and questions by Facebook and Periscope. Leslie's calling from Oklahoma. She's on line one. Leslie, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I just have a quick question. Will Judge Sullivan's to the D.C. Circuit Court be made public?
Yes, it's basically, Andy, Judge Sullivan's been ordered to defend himself in a brief. I mean, that's basically what this is. That's what the order says. It will be public.
Yes, that'll be made public. It'll be filed and it'll be made public, and he'll have to defend himself and explain his ruling and his reluctance or his failure to act, and we'll all know what it says. We don't do things in secret in federal court unless it's sealed for some national security reason or to save someone's life if it's in danger. But he's going to have to put down in writing so that everyone in the world can see why he did what he did.
You know, Andy, I was just thinking about this. I mean, because I've never seen this. You've never seen it. And collectively, you and I have been practicing law about 90 years. And I've never seen anything like this. But having said that, this judge is going to basically has been ordered to file a brief with the Court of Appeals defending himself. I mean, this is unprecedented. I've never seen this.
No, I've never seen the Court of Appeals, any Court of Appeals, take this action against a judge. But let's face it, Jay, he acted roguishly. He acted wrongly. He acted in a fashion that is completely contrary to the way a judge should do. A judge rules on motions. A judge doesn't bring in another judge to give him advice and to be a special prosecutor and do the things that he wanted him to do. In his order, that is Judge Sullivan. And sometimes the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court has to come down with a pretty heavy hand when someone has done what he has done and gone way, way off into an area that is just improper for a judge to go into. And that's what they did with Judge Sullivan.
So here's what's interesting. Andy McCarthy's former U.S. attorney as well, as Andy was, and his commentator, National Review, has a great website himself. Here's what he had to say about it. Take a listen.
I think it means that the Court of Appeals is giving Judge Sullivan a face-saving, graceful way to get out of this on his own without the appellate court having to slap him down because there's simply no legal justification for what he's doing. And I think hopefully what the court is telling him is, you know, look, count to 10. We have to get our political disputes out of the courthouse.
So I think that's exactly what this is. It was a bit of a face saving, but it was sure a direct order. Let's go to Bobby's calling in New York on line two. Hi, Bobby. Welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. I'm just wondering if you think the chances are at all possible that the Court of Appeals would side with Judge Sullivan and that the case will continue on, or do you think ultimately the case will be dismissed? What's your take?
Well, look, anything's possible. I mean, it's always dangerous to predict. I think the judicial philosophy of the judges and their understanding of the Constitution, it was interesting. This order was issued by all three judges, two Republican appointees, one Democrat appointee. But it was a unanimous order, so I think that speaks some pretty serious volume. I would think, if I was guessing, and an educated guess, I've been before that court many times, of course, the Supreme Court as well, that Judge Sullivan is clearly, I mean, I think if you look at the law, Judge Sullivan is clearly wrong. He has no authority to do this. He's appointing a special prosecutor. He's Article 3, not Article 2, so he doesn't get to do that. So I think ultimately the Court of Appeals would reverse Judge Sullivan. And like Andy McCarthy said, it's kind of a face-saving matter. He can explain himself or decide, you know what, it's not worth the aggravation. I'm just going to do the right thing here. The government lied to General Flynn. did not give him exculpatory evidence that he was entitled to. Andy, that in of itself is reason to let that plea be revoked and the case is over. And the parties are in agreement. And you've got a recent Supreme Court case authored by Justice Ginsburg, 9-0. 9-0. Andy?
Well, I hate to make predictions on what any judge or any jury is going to do because you never know. I've been around too long to make those predictions. But I have a pretty good feeling that Judge Sullivan is going to be reversed and he's going to be ordered to rule on this thing, this pending motion to dismiss the case against General Flynn. It's wrong to become a prosecutor when you are a judge. I think the Court of Appeals was right. I think if it even goes to the Supreme Court, if in some fashion it is postured that way, the Supreme Court will do the right thing and say, Judge Sullivan, you're off base. So I really have all confidence that the rule of law is going to prevail and Judge Sullivan will be sanctioned for his conduct.
Okay, so here's what I want to do. We've got another segment coming up. It's a segment where we take your calls on any topic. So you give us a call at 800-684-3110. But, Than, I want you to give an update on, look, the unemployment numbers are high, and there are people that are hurting, and we know that. And now there's talk of another stimulus package. Our team's been going through what that looks like. Where is all this process? I know Mitch McConnell's talked about some of this. We'll get into more of this next week. What's your sense?
Yeah, Secretary Mnuchin and Leader McConnell and efforts to include Speaker Pelosi in this have been talking this week, Jay. I think there is a growing consensus that there will be another bill. In fact, while both the chambers are going to be out on Memorial Day recess next week, the indication that those conversations will continue next week. I think you will start to see the framework of the next bill come into place. I think the centerpiece will probably be another direct payment to the American people. Jay, I will tell you the timeline was set back by Speaker Pelosi going her own way and passing the $3 trillion bill that was just mainly a wish list for the left. However, the main parties that need to be in the room now are talking to each other. There does seem to be consensus that another package is needed. Jay, again, both chambers are on recess next week, so you won't see debate on the floor either one next week. But I think the following week, Jay, I think that's when you see the debate on one of the floors start to begin.
All right, of course, we're following that in our Office of Government Affairs that Than Bennett heads up. ACLJ.org, if you want to support the work of the ACLJ, if you're able, we encourage that. If you want to talk to us on air, 1-800-684-3110. Last segment, you can talk on any topic that you'd like, and we'll address it. 800-684-3110. Also, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, at Jay Sekulow, at Jordan Sekulow, at ACLJ. That allows you to stay engaged and informed on all of these critical issues. We're going to take your calls and your comments on Facebook that are already coming in as soon as we get back from the break. But again, if you want to talk to us on air, that's easy. 1-800-684-3110.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
I guess you can tell I miss the music because I'm letting those intros and outros play a long time. I'm not the only one, though, I have to say. I got on Facebook, Debbie said, I miss the band's live performances, too. So, Debbie, we're not going to be able to do live performances anytime soon, but let me tell you one thing that our band director, music director, is working on, Mark Townsend. He's working on a situation where we're going to be able to, we'll be in different locations, but we're going to pick a tune. We may do a Monkees tune, actually, from the Monkees, one of the Monkees songs. And we're going to each play our part, and then our editing team and Mark's audio technique, and they're going to put it all together as a video that we'll be able to release. And I probably could release it live, but it'll be already put together. You're seeing some of those on some of the various Facebook pages, and I've really enjoyed watching those concerts. All right, we're going to take our phones, 800-684-3110. So that's coming. We'll work on something, but I think we're all missing the band a little bit. Michael's calling from Ohio. He's on line one. Hi, Michael.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Seculo. By the way, great work with what you did during the impeachment hearings.
Thanks,
myself and many others couldn't appreciate it more. My question about Judge Sullivan is obviously he's clearly injecting politics into this, which has been stated. It's very obvious. With where this is going to the appeals court and possibly the Supreme Court, if Judge Sullivan were to continue to try to have his way with this,
yep,
trying to be judge, jury, you know, prosecutor,
yep,
obviously there's no precedent for it, and obviously he's clearly wrong. What potentially could he possibly face from a legal standpoint? And I guess where I'm going with this.
Well, let me answer that for you. Look, I mean, let's say, for instance, if the Court of Appeals were to rule against General Flynn and the great motion that Sidney Powell filed, which I find hard that they would, but let's say they did, she could take it up to the, you could take that writ of mandamus up to the U.S. Supreme Court. I mean, that's perfectly allowable. But what happens to the judge? I don't want anybody with this, you know, confusion here. What happens to the judge, Andy, is if Sidney wins, he's reversed. He's not removed from office. Now, maybe he's conflicted out of the case at that point. I don't know. I haven't even thought about the parameters of that. In other words, he'd have to recuse himself, but he would be reversed. That's what happens to the judge.
That's right. He simply is reversed, and they say, your opinion was wrong, your decision is wrong, we reverse you. Now, judges, and this has happened in the past, who engage in repeated patterns of disobeying the orders of appellate courts, and who just go off on their own or commit crimes, and this is not him. I'm not saying he committed a crime. I'm not saying that at all. He simply is wrong, in my view, on the law, but it is the law that judges who completely disregard the orders of appellate courts repeatedly and commit offenses that are criminal offenses could stand to be impeached. I don't see that happening in Judge Sullivan's case. I think he's going to abide by the ruling of the appellate court. He's been in there 25 years. He knows the law. He knows what he's supposed to do. And he's going to have to acquit himself pretty clearly in this brief that he's going to have to file in 10 days.
Let me go to, you're exactly right. Let me go to Dawn, who's calling from Montana. She's on line five. Hi, Dawn.
Hello, Jay. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question today is, the number of justices appointed by Trump and confirmed sounds really good, but how does it compare with the last three or four administrations?
Yeah, well, look, on judges, the president's way ahead. I'll go to Van Bennett on that because we track that information, but the number of confirmed appointments here is very, very significant. Van?
Yeah, it's more than all of them. Even if you reach back farther than that, Jay, at this point of President Trump's term, he has 193, about to be 194 federal judges confirmed. President Obama had 137 at this stage. George W. Bush had 171. Bill Clinton, 188. George H.W. Bush, 133. And Ronald Reagan, 129. And Jay, I will just tell you quickly, without getting too deep into the weeds, it's even more remarkable because the United States Senate has demanded more cloture votes by the term of like times 100. I mean, they never used to have take cloture votes, so they've had to take multiple votes and roll more Senate floor time, and yet President Trump still has more confirmed judges than all of those past presidents.
No, that's very true. Lisa on Facebook has raised a great question. Let me read it to everybody. Is there any concern about the ballot changes some states are talking about putting in place in response to COVID-19? Andy and I have actually talked about that. And let me be very clear here. We were very pleased that the Supreme Court of the United States said what happened in Wisconsin was unconstitutional. Wisconsin, they let mail-in ballots. They could be post-dated. In other words, dated after the election and still count. That is absurd. And the Supreme Court said, you cannot do that. That's wrong. Now, are states going to have more of a mail-in ballot situation in light of the COVID-19? The answer is yes. Under our Constitution, the states have those kind of authorities. But the important underlining here is it has to be consistent with the Constitution. In other words, the state can't just say you can mail in your ballot if the election's November 3rd, as long as we get it by November 15th, even if it's marked November 8th, it's fine. No, that would be unconstitutional. There are, you know, people have absentee ballots, but Andy, we talked about that yesterday. That's a really verifiable process. And you can't just have ballots laying around an apartment complex and say, go fill it out yourself and let us know what you think.
No, I think the procedure should be consistent, as we said, Jay, with that of absentee ballots. That's the procedure that should be followed. That's a constitutionally tried and true procedure. But the mail-in ballot at your leisure, whenever you want to, whoever you are, without any verification, I don't think passes constitutional scrutiny. I think the absentee ballot procedure that we have used, that we use in almost all jurisdictions, is something that we can live with.
Yeah, Than, has any of this come up in the Senate yet or the House?
The mail-in balloting?
Yeah, just what kind of, because states are... If the states are going to be making the decisions on this, I suspect.
Yeah, I mean, to that extent, it has. It has been in several bills that have passed the House. The position of Leader McConnell and probably a majority of the United States Senate is wanting to retain state control over that. Jay, I think there is some openness to expansion of mail-in balloting, but those decisions have to be made at a state level. I think you're going to see universal resistance from both, well, I shouldn't say from the left. You're going to see universal resistance from the right to the federal government saying you must do it exclusively that way. They're not going to go for that.
Yeah, do you all, there's another question I had on this, and that is there was some of the money for appropriations had, I think, something to do with, if I remember correctly, I may be off on this, with regard to this issue of ballots and the, you know, the new electoral processes.
Yeah, and the stimulus bill that was enacted, Jay, there is money for the states to be used in this, but again, it's controlled by the Senate, the state, and the states get to decide how to spend it. Now, it's different in what was passed in Speaker Pelosi's bill. That money would come with strings and would force states to do it the way that she prefers.
Yeah, and that's where we're going. There will be constitutional battles on this. I have no doubt, because there already have been. That does it for our broadcast this week. Remote again, but we're able to get it to you every single day, 52 weeks a year, with our entire team. And I want to thank our team, who's working very hard making sure we can keep this on the air. You know, CBS News the other day could not get their broadcast on the air. I've got sympathy for that. We understand. I mean, you know, we're coming from you all from remote locations. But your support of the American Center for Law and Justice supports our team, including the people that you don't see that are working on this broadcast right now, or our social media team. So when you're watching on Facebook or Periscope or putting up your comments, they're working right now, or our video team. Support the work of the ACLJ. You're supporting all of them as well. ACLJ.org. Have a great weekend.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.